We're on chapter 21, page 513, 514, in the old numbers, Kuflamet Gimel, on the top numbers. This is a tzedakah letter. The purpose of this letter, interesting enough, is not actually to raise funds. It was sent as a community letter to those people who had already pledged to give money to Israel through Kol El Chabad, which is the Alter Rebbe's favorite charity that he established. And his deal was that he didn't want people sort of like saving their money in like the little pushka, and then at the end of the year giving the money that they said that they were going to give. He wanted people to give more often. That's the point of the letter. Okay? And then there's all kinds of discussions back and forth as which is better.
Okay.
To give a big amount or give
bigger, a lot, or a consistent amount.
And there's a... the Rebbe's campaign of giving tzedakah is based on this letter. The Tzemach Tzedek had a Maimer in Torah Ur, which was 10 pages long, discussing the idea back and forth.
Wow.
So he says, we'll see how far we get into this. Achar Drishas HaMishpat L'Oyvei Shamay. He says, after seeking out the peace, as one is obligated to those who love his name. We'll stop right there. This is not just, the Alter Rebbe doesn't do just. This is not just an opening to be nice.
Right, yeah.
Okay? It's normal to say, Achar Drishas Shalom. You could do that, you know, a dash, if you write it in English.
Right.
But he says, Kimishpat, according to the law. So what is he saying? It says that we're talking to people who have already pledged to give tzedakah.
Yeah.
These people are therefore called, these are people who are in the groove. They're called Oyavei Shemai. They're called the lovers of his name, the lovers of Hashem's name.
Wow. That's no small potato.
Yeah, no.
That is no small potato.
All you got to do is say, I'm going to give tzedakah to Eretz Israel. You get to be called the Oyavei Shemai. Why else would you be giving tzedakah to Israel?
Yeah,
you know, it must be that you love something over there. It's on the right line. So the Drishas Shalom, it says, why it's specifically connected to the searching for pieces, Achar Drishas Shalom. We would translate, Adash is translated in English as, hey, how you doing? It says, upon inquiring about your welfare. Okay? The word darish means to search for, like the word drasha. It's the same type of a thing. It says that, so what does the word put the word in kemishpat for? Which you don't see that usually in letters anywhere by anybody.
Okay.
Is because since we're talking about Israel, so it says Israel is the land that Darash Hashem somewhere the words Einai in there, that Hashem searches, Hashem is looking at, Hashem is specifically watching over the land of Israel.
Yeah.
So if it is that Hashem is specifically watching over the land of Israel, as we learned back in letter 14.
Right.
So Hashem, and making sure that it says that, that the eyes of God are upon the land of Israel from the beginning of the year to the end of the year.
Right.
So those people who are taking care of Israel are therefore deserving of and warrant also Drishas Hashem, that Hashem should watch after them as well. Okay? Sort of kind of like if you have something precious and you hire somebody to take care of this precious thing, you're going to take care of the person who's watching your precious thing.
Right.
Why? Because you want your precious thing
taken care of. Right.
So, like this, that the Alter Rebbe is saying, I am requesting peace upon you, you guys that have already pledged your pledge to the giving to the support of the poor in Israel. So, for sure, then, it's demanded that Hashem take care of you.
Yeah.
That's what he means when he says kemishpat. And hence it's called, therefore he says, Lo'ayavei Shemai. Because, like I said, why are they giving to Israel? El hamitzdadvim ba'am, lases tzidkas Hashem im artza hakadesha, that they are doing the righteousness of Hashem with his holy land. So it says here now, it sits into the guise of the question which was posed but to Rabbi Meir as to Rabbi Akiva, that if Hashem loves the poor so much, why doesn't he take care of them? And his response was, he does. And he loves us so much that he lets us participate in that.
Right.
So that the those people who have already pledged, they're doing, what are they doing? They're doing the rightness of Hashem. Okay, that Hashem has already promised, I'm going to take care of Israel.
Yes.
And we see, I mean, this letter was written in the 1790s probably, that how Hashem has taken care of Israel since the 1790s.
Yeah.
Okay, not a whole lot to talk about from, say, like 1790 to, like, you know, 1936, 35, whatever. So, but from 48 on till today,
yeah, yeah. We
see that the Israel exists in a state of miraculousness. Even though you could explain it, you know, the ingenuity of the Israeli, you know, the smartness of the Jewish people, et cetera, et cetera, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you could.
Okay, Israel, it's like the Brits said. You know, you want your freedom? Fine. We're going to leave, and then you'll be gone in 3 weeks.
Right.
That's what he said. We're going to leave, and in 3 weeks, there won't be any Jews left in Israel. Mm. That's because that's natural. If, what is it, 300 million Arabs surrounding them?
Right.
And whatever they are, and, you know, Baruch Hashem, we're flourishing.
Right.
Why? Because it's Tzidkas Hashem.
Right.
It doesn't, not that Hashem is like saying, oh, you know what, Israel's such a charity case. Oh, poor Israel, I have to take it. No, that's the tzedakah doesn't mean charity. Tzedakah means right. So this is the rightness of Hashem. It is the, since it is that Israel is what it is, that he discussed back in chapter 14 of Egeres HaKodesh, it's the century point by which godliness comes into the world, is through Israel. With the 10 Kedushas of Israel starting from the Holy of Holies and going through Jerusalem and out to the rest of the land and then finally out to Chutz La'aretz is where it gets disseminated to the rest of the world. Yeah. So this Israel is, it has to be functioning. Because Israel doesn't function, there's no earth.
Right.
As simple
right,
as that.
Right.
As it says, that what are they doing? L'seis mi deshana v'shana choy kakatsu be'es eretz ha'kodesh tivna v'tikayna v'mher b'yameinu. Every single year, they've given us an amount of money, and very often it was that the Alter Rebbe would tell people, you have to give so much and so much.
Wow.
Based on what I know you're worth,
right.
This is how much you have to give this year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Alter Rebbe would appoint numbers.
Right.
The Rebbe wasn't one to do that. One famous Fabrengen. I used to know what data. What was the cause? The cause was building Kfar Chabad or Kfar Chabad base or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he requested that people write down their name and the number that they plan to give. And he is going to look through every piece of paper and he's going to just say how much more you should give more or how much you should give less.
Wow.
Okay, and there were people that he told them, it's way too much, you should give this amount less. You don't see how much they gave, they wrote down.
Right, okay.
But there were people, he turned to more to, what's his name, Moshe Weiss, who's a rich person in California.
Hmm.
And he turned to him, I think he said 100 times more. That's nice, give 100 times more. Yeah, you know, that kind of thing, or it was 10 times. And so it was like enough that people kind of like their eyebrows fell off the top of their heads. You know, so the Rebbe wasn't one for doing that per se. The Alter Rebbe did it all the time. But then again, I think the Alter Rebbe was probably dealing with pennies. You know, how much should people have in
Russia?
Yeah,
okay, but when a guy made 3 cents a week, pennies.
Yeah. I'm saying he wasn't dealing with a whole lot.
Yeah.
So he says that over here at this point, he wants to. To strengthen the weak and to that there should flow like dew, the words that are coming out of my mouth, I want to encourage, the word zrizis means alacrity. So what's the word for alacrity? A speed up, I mean, you know. So alacrity is more than speed.
Yeah, he uses the word bestir here.
Is that a real word?
I don't think so.
Oh,
it's got, yeah, maybe. Bestir? Yeah, maybe.
Okay, fine.
Maybe.
I don't even think you'd see such a word in biblical English, but
yeah.
Anyway, so.
It's like in the Siddur where it says unclose. That kind of drives me nuts.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah.
Okay. This to the word zaresis means alacrity. Okay, which alacrity means speed and diligence.
Yes.
That's what alacrity, it doesn't just mean speed, because you could have speed and just like plow through things. That's not called alacrity. Okay, it's a sense of putting into it a sense of urgency and doing it as quickly and as diligently as possible. So he says, the expression is, ein lazarim ele miserosim. The only ones that you can instill alacrity in are people with alacrity.
True.
It's not going to help. If somebody's doesn't got it, it's not going to help if you can try and it's like kicking a rock.
You want
it's
something not, done, find a busy person.
Right. Just like, you know, you kick a rock, it's still a rock.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's focusing on this, l'chazik yedayim rafois, and to strengthen weak hands, b'matin dami mois eretz yisrael midei shabbos b'shabbatay l'pachas midei chadish b'chadshay. So he says that the amount which is requested of you, or the amount that you pledged, is how much you're going to give this year.
Right.
But what I would prefer is, rather than you waiting until, say, Elul to give your money,
right,
rather you should do it on a weekly basis, send a check every week,
right,
or at least monthly.
Yeah.
This has become a big thing among fundraising tactics.
Yeah.
You hear it, everybody's doing it. Every organization, their uncle. Monthly pledges.
Uh-huh.
Okay? You're not going to give $1,000, but could you give $100 a month? The person could say, I could give $100,000 a month. Guess what? They gave $1,200.
Exactly.
So they gave more than $1,000.
Right, sure.
So this monthly pledge is over here. Me'ercha hakatzav le'erech shana. And he says, but at least divide it up by 12 easy payments. Kol kesef hakadoshim asher ala alev ish lehinisdadav b'li neder lefarnes. How much people have taken upon themselves as part of their yearly pledges for taking care of our brethren who are living in Israel on a yearly basis. That's how they're pledging it.
Right.
So the point being is, it's all very well and good if you give all of your money in Elul. What's the guy supposed to do the other 11 months of the year in Israel, waiting for your big deal?
Eat dirt.
Yeah, maybe. Okay? So, and it's not like in Israel at this time they could borrow money from somebody.
Right.
Because there was nobody to borrow money from.
Right, exactly.
So he can't say, listen, I'm waiting for my pledge from Kolo, for my offer from Kolo Chabad.
Right.
There's nobody to make that offer to.
Right, exactly.
So,
yeah.
So there are questions to be asked of him, as he's going to deal with now. The idea of zerizis with tzedakah, he's talking about people who are planned giving anyway. So what is this whole deal? Is it better than, so Rebbe asked the question, is it better to give on a time installed basis, because that way you have the zerizis involved, doing the mitzvah, you're going to do the mitzvah. If he gives $1,200 in Elul, or $100 a month, so as far as the mitzvah is concerned, it's exactly the same mitzvah.
Right.
But like this, that he didn't push it off, and he's giving some of it now, and some of it later, a little bit after that.
The impact is different.
So that by the time he gets to Elul, all he has is $100 left.
Right.
So what he now has is he has the mitzvah, plus the zerizis, plus the alacrity.
Uh-huh.
So that would be considered like a hider mitzvah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So, it would, like, you know, the poor person doesn't care if you polish the coins.
Right.
Look what beautiful coins I'm giving you. So,
yeah.
No, that's not called, that's not the hider in giving tzedakah.
No. Yeah,
the hider in tzedakah is how often the person is giving it.
I'm hungry today.
Yeah. And he quotes it over here, it's quoted before and elsewhere, that the Rebbe's tzedakah campaign, Mivtzah tzedakah, was primarily with tzedakah pushkas.
Yeah.
That the Rebbe wanted people to have tzedakah pushkas in open places, and in the kitchen, on a desk at an office, in a kid's room, where it would be seen, where every so often on a regular basis people would throw something into it. And based on the idea, we learned this as a Simon Hay of a Geras HaKodesh, where he gives the example of a suit of mail.
Right.
That was like they did in the Roman times, which was made of little scales,
right.
And that each scale really didn't amount to a whole lot, right. But all the scales together made a coat of mail. Okay, so so you have then that was the idea behind the Rebbe's campaign, but at the same time, the Rebbe also commented, "Oh, by the way, people who can give like big sums of money." Should still give the big sums of money.
Right.
When he gave a pushka to a guy who was a billionaire, for example,
right.
The purpose was not so that he should just think, well, I'll be fulfill my obligation by throwing quarters into it.
Right.
No, you still have miser or chaimish, whatever these things are.
It was for his benefit.
It was for his benefit,
right.
That because, okay, good. Because let's say, what would be the best deal? According to Alter Rebbe, would it be, let's say the guy says, okay, I'm going to give $1,200, I'm going to do it in Tishrei.
Right.
I'll give it right at the beginning of the year. So now the guy's got the money.
Right.
And what person who's collecting funds doesn't want all the money up front? Everybody would say, I'll take the money up front.
Sure.
Okay? It's debatable if a person's handling with a fundraiser, is handling with a balabas, and the guy says to him, well, I don't know. I can either give you $100 a month, or I can give you $1,200 in a year from now. Which is he going to take? Depends, I guess, on the fundraiser. But for sure, if the guy says, I'm going to give you $1,200 now, or I can pay you out $100 a month, which would you prefer? There's not going to be a fundraiser anywhere in the world that's
right.
going to say, you know what, I'll take it in payments, it's okay.
Right. One of the hands worth two in a bush.
Yeah, exactly. I want it now, and give it to the whole thing now.
Right.
Okay, the payment plan is just like bitty of it. Once it happened already, it's like that's the way it is.
Sure.
So the Rebbe talks about this idea that when we're talking about Zerizis over here, so a person who gives the whole large sum at the beginning of the year, so he's got both also, because he's doing the mitzvah, and he's got even more Zerizis.
Yeah, because he did it instantly.
He did it all at once.
Right.
So that would be absolutely the best thing, but the Rebbe maintains that guy should also have a pushka on his desk to give quarters into.
Sure. That's
because that's for his benefit, because
sure.
He's each little bit is still the act itself is
it affects
every
him.
Act of tzedakah is creating an effect on him
and
the
world.
World.
Right.
And so like that, so you could give a guy who gives $1 billion away, you could give him a tzedakah pushka too to throw quarters
of course
into.
Of course you should. Yeah.
Okay. Vihine, Bilvad ha'yadu l'kol. Besides the fact that it's known to everybody, Goyel Miles has Zerizos b'chol ha'mitzvahs. Hanemar v'nishva b'divrei Arizal. As it says, and we know, everybody knows, that whenever you have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, you should do it with speed and alacrity.
Uh-huh.
You have all kinds of statements all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it says, don't let your matzahs become chametz.
Yeah.
So they make drashas on it. Don't let your mitzvahs become chametz. Meaning,
right.
What do you have to do to make something chametz? Is you leave it sitting around,
right?
Okay, and then it becomes chametz. So if it says if you have an opportunity to do a mitzvah, don't leave it sitting around. Do it right away.
Yeah.
So there's all types of everybody knows about that. So what do you have to do? If everybody knows it, supposedly it should be for sure. And he says for sure about tzedakah.
Mm.
It says a person should always try and do his mitzvah as early as possible. At this point, it seems, at least to me, that the Alter Rebbe is taking the bottom line from a story that happened to him.
Okay.
Okay. So this letter was probably written in the 1790s, but there was a story that happened to him. In the late 1760s, early 1700s, 1770s.
Right.
In the Mezrich, to get into the yeshiva, you had to be a hoo-ha.
Yeah.
Every one of the students of the Mezrich Magid went on to become a Rebbe.
Hoo-ha, you're talking about in learning.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we're talking about,
No.
They didn't. Nobody got in on football scholarships.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So you had to be a somebody. I mean, you had to be. You know, the Alter Rebbe was the youngest one.
Yeah.
You know, you had to be a caliber of a Rebbe.
Yeah.
You know, every name of every dynasty that you could possibly say goes back to the Mizrach Maggid, of course.
Yeah.
You know, so there were people who applied who didn't get in.
Right.
Why? They weren't of that caliber.
Mm.
What did those people do? Those people were the hanger-oners. The Mizrach Maggid would teach a class, and the students would participate, and then these hanger-oners would bother the students, tell us what the Mizrach Maggid said, explain it to us.
Yeah.
Okay? Those people in Russian, they're called chrubnikyes, which means, I think, hanger-oners.
Okay.
I'm not sure what it is. I don't speak Russian. Okay, so what did these people do? In exchange for learning with the students of the Mizrach Maggid, they did menial tasks for them. They would do their laundry, they would clean their rooms, you know, this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay? These were the groupies.
Sure.
Okay? So the Alter Rebbe once went to sleep in the middle of the winter sometime, at like about 3 o'clock in the morning. He just got into bed.
Yeah.
And what needed to be done? The Russian winter and the way they had houses over there, somebody had to come in and make sure your fire was
stoked. Fire, sure.
Because you're going to freeze to death.
Yeah.
In the Russian winter over there,
sure.
Without the fire going. Okay, so there's three guys come in, three of these chubnikas, these hanger-oners. Okay, and they're having this whole discussion. Alter Rebbe is lying in bed listening to this. And what the most amazing part of the story is these guys are having this conversation like they're in a marketplace in the middle of the day. And it's in this guy's room at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And it's in the Alter Rebbe's bedroom,
3 o'clock in the morning. Okay?
Yeah.
As they're standing there playing with the fire.
Right.
Okay, so what it was, it says, one of them says a question. He says, what was the big deal, Avram Avinu? Hashem told him, take his son and make a sacrifice for it. And everybody makes a whole big deal out of it. He says, there were many tzaddikim, he's going to say right now, there are many tzaddikim that Hashem didn't tell them directly, and they sacrificed their own lives. Okay, so what's the big deal? Okay? So they asked, that's okay, you got the question, you got an answer? He says, yeah, I think I thought of an answer. Okay, he says, what's the answer? Is that that Avraham Avinu was first. He was the first one that God spoke to him and said to do this act of Mesiras Nefesh. The second one says, that doesn't answer the question. Because like you said, God spoke to Abraham. If God had spoken to me first, with nobody else doing it, I also would have done it like Abraham. So he said, okay, you got a better answer? So he says, yeah. He says, the big deal about Abraham was that it says, Vayashkem Avraham Babukir, Vayachavish is Hamaroi, that Avraham woke up in the morning and he saddled the donkey himself and he got on the way right away. Most people, you tell them, listen, your son's the last day you spend with your son. What are you going to do? You're going to hang out with them. You're going to have a nice lunch. You get around to it. You'll get on there. Avraham, right away, 1, 2, 3. Third one says, what kind of answer is that? Says, if God would have told, he went to sleep. That says he woke up early in the morning, right? Then that the day before God tells him, go sacrifice your son. So what does he do? He goes to sleep. Huh? What kind of business? And how could he sleep that he woke up? The next morning he's going to sacrifice his son. How could he sleep? So he turned to him and said, okay, you got an answer? He said, I think so. He said, Avraham followed the directions. It didn't matter what else seemed to was going on. He was accosted by the Medrash. He was accosted by the Sutton. Old men were laughing at him. He walked up to his nose into a river. And Hashem says, we go. That was the deal with Avraham. Okay, the first one didn't come back and say, well, this is what's wrong with that one. It should be like, you know, they come up with, because otherwise you'd be able to, so that's where the story ends.
Yeah, okay.
The Alter Rebbe says, when he was telling the story, that he realized that each of these three people answered the question because that's where they were up to in their Avodas Hashem. Okay, so now given that story, so now the Alter Rebbe talks about the idea of Zerizus. And the altar and related to Avram Avinu. So he says, all mitzvahs have zrizus. He says, for example, zrizus to Avram Avinu alav shalom, that the alacrity that Avram Avinu displayed, hu amedes la'ad lanu l'vinenu ad olam, has been implanted within us. It's standing firm within us, to us and our children forever. Ki ha'akeda atzma eina nachshavas kol kachlu nesoyin godol le'erch milas Avram Avinu olav shalom. Because as far as taking your son and binding him to an offer and preparing for a slaughter, as far as Avram was concerned, what Avram had to do, it wasn't really such a big test. That's why he's quoting that. Well, what was the big test then? Avram got thrown into a furnace. You know, that's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Okay, Avram had to fight armies by himself.
Yeah.
Avram had to fight his own relatives, which is even worse.
Right.
Okay, so this thing about binding, but now, oh, this is now God says, oh, now I see you're a God-fearing person, this is it, this is the best thing you could possibly have done. So he says, because Shagam ki havaya diber bai, even though it was, he did it because Hashem spoke to him directly, like the first person said. As it says, Kachnas Bincha, as it says, take your son and offer him for the slaughter. Harikama Vikama Kedushim Shemasu Nashon Kedushim Hashem. You see that there are many tzaddikim that actually martyred themselves for the sake of God. Gamki Lodi Bir Hashem Bam. Even though Hashem didn't talk to them. So what's the big deal, Avram Avinu? Raksha Avram Avinu Olav Shalom Asas Zeis Bezerizus Nifla. Avraham did it with great alacrity. Like the second answer.
Right.
Lahara simchose vechefse lamalus ratzen kainai. And now he throws in the third answer. To show his joy and desire to filling the will and desires of his maker. Lasis nachas ruach. That's the third answer. Liyitzrei. Okay, so that it is a normal thing. He's going to say this right here. How many people want to give away their money?
None.
Well, exactly.
Maybe. Might be one, but the answer is none.
No, people do not want to give away your money. But given that we were taught the philosophy and the idea of it, it's not your money, and you have to give it away anyway. And so people say, okay, what do? They say, if I got to do it, okay, so I'll give the money away.
Yeah.
We come up with all kinds of things. If it's, you get the 110%, and if it's not, then Hashem is going to take the 10%. And if you start playing games, then Hashem will play games back. The story in the Gemara of a guy who says 10% of 100 leaves me 10% of 1,000 leaves me 900. Right. So really, I should be giving 90 bushels of wheat away instead of 100 bushels of wheat. So you could give away 90 the next year. His field, instead of producing 1,000 bushels of wheat, produced 900.
Right.
Okay, and he went down and down until it produced 100. Then he realized, oh, wait a minute, I'm a schmo.
Right.
Okay, and he finally built it back up to get it to producing 1,000.
Right.
Okay, so you can't play games with Hashem when it comes to these things.
Right.
And since it is that we are discussing this before Rosh Hashanah, the week before Rosh Hashanah, so it's an opportune time. Everybody should go to their computers and they should look at their checkbook account, checkbook software, and print out that little pie graph, or pull up the little pie graph that shows what their all their expenditures were, the money coming in, and how it was proportioned out.
Right.
And you look at a little category that you say that says charity. That little piece of the pie should be at least 10%.
Right.
And if it's not, then this is the week that you got to do that.
Right.
Okay. You ever heard the story about me and a printer? I remember telling. Okay, so the story that goes with the it's called
printer.
The computer printer. Yeah. So this is back in the early 90s, and I had gotten my 286 is my second computer. I've outgrown an XT, and I've gotten a 286.
Yes.
And I needed a printer.
Uh-huh.
Printers were expensive.
Right.
Okay, so I was talking to somebody, and the guy tells me he just got himself a bubble jet printer. Whoa. And he had this 9-pin printer.
A 9-bit, yes.
He had a 9-pin printer that he wasn't using, and I could use it. Okay? Which, you know, you had to put the thing on, like, set it at fine, and it would get...
Yes.
Whenever it would print, I'd have to leave the room because my fillings would start jingling under there, you know, so... So he said, when do you want it back? He said, well, I don't need it. I got this other one. Okay, so in my mind, that means he's never going to need it back again because it's this old computer, you know, old technology when you give away an old computer part. So that's what I thought in my old. So I had a thing for a couple of months, and then the floor fell out on the price of inkjet printers.
Right.
And I got myself an inkjet printer. Hoo-ha! Wow. $150. We have even printed in color, but you have to take the black and white out and put in the black toner out and put in the color one.
Yes.
So this is very cool. So I put the I even called him up. I said, listen, I'm done with your 9-pin printer. Do you want it back? He said, no, I don't need it. Hang on. Okay. So put it on the shelf in the basement. I get a call. Oh, before that. So the week before Rosh Hashanah, so now I have this Quicken program and I pull it up and I see that I'm $340 short for my 10% the week before Rosh Hashanah. So I sat down, I had a stack of envelopes, I wrote out checks, and all the checks equaled $300.
Right.
I said, I'll get to the $40. Okay. I got a call. Rosh Hashanah was on a Sunday night, like this year. I got a call on Thursday morning. He wants his 9-pin printer back.
Yes.
I said, okay, fine. So I go to the basement, and it's not there. What happened? My wife says she remembers seeing something like that, but she probably threw it out. You know, okay, so thank you very much for throwing it away. So now I tell him, I don't know where it is. He says, that's fine. You owe me a 9-pin printer, and I'm sure you'll be able to take care of it. So I got in the car. I drove over to CompUSA on John R. and 14 Mile over there behind Oakland Mall.
Yeah.
And I walk in, I say, I need a 9-pin printer. And I'm figuring a bubble jet printer is $150, so an old technology, a 9-pin printer, must be $50.
Yeah.
That's fine, okay.
It's $200.
$400.
$400. Whoa.
And I said, what's the deal? And he says, if you want a 9-pin printer, it's because you want it for business, because that way you can print in triplicate.
Right.
Which I don't think anybody does that anymore. I think they just print out 3 copies if they need triplicate at this point.
Yeah.
And I even said that. What do you need to print in triplicate for? You just print the thing 3 times. Mm-hmm. No, people want to use the carbon copies, et cetera, et cetera, you know, so. Says, I'm not paying $400 for a printer. I say, well, something's going to happen, I'll be able to do it. That night, Thursday night, I'm teaching a class. Okay, the class goes from 9 till 10. We sat and we schmoozed. When the class was over, 10:45, we're still sitting and schmoozing. The phone rang. The guy answers the phone, and he says, no, it isn't it. He says, there's a CPA firm going out of business. Does anybody need any office furniture? And everybody's like, oh, office furniture. I said, wait, does he have any computer printers? And he says, do they have any computer printers? He says, they have 4. He says, when can I come? He says, when? He says, just come over right now. They have to be out of the building before morning. Okay? So I rush over from this class in Oak Park to the Comerica building on Tel 12.
Uh-huh.
And I go up to the place over there. The first thing I walk in, I see this chair in the executive suite. It's like the CEO's chair.
Right.
This is this massive chair. I sit in this chair. I get lost. Okay? So I say, how much for the chair? They said, just get it out of here.
Wow.
If you can take it now, you can have it.
Right.
Okay, I threw it in the back of my car. Then I go look at the printer. There are now 3 printers there. One of them is already gone. I take a look at it, and one it looks like it's in the best shape. I say, okay, I'll take this one. And they said, don't worry about it. We'll take care of you later. Okay, we'll take care of it later.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So I run. It's now 11:30 at night. And I run over to the guy's house. I knock on the door. I say, here's your printer. He says, looks at it and says, this is not my printer. I said, well, what's the problem? He said, this is a 24-pin printer. This is better than the one I lent you. I said, don't worry about it. It's yours. Have a nice day. Happy birthday. Okay? So that's Thursday before Rosh Hashanah. The day after Rosh Hashanah, I get a bill from the CPA firm.
$40
for the printer.
$40.
And I said, $40? Wow. What happened to the $40 I was supposed to give? No, it was before Rosh Hashanah. So anyway, let's just finish up to the ach.
There you go.
Lamda rizal liyaser umemenu lamda rizal the kaim kol mitzvah b'chalav b'prat ma'aseh tzedakah ha'olah kelana. And for this, our sages have taught that every single mitzvah, and specifically the mitzvah of tzedakah, which it says that tzedakah keneged kulam. There's lots of mitzvahs it says, or tzedakah is over all mitzvahs. Hamagino matzalam parasteh ha'boylam azeh v'kol mini paranius misrakshus. That we don't really underappreciate the fruit of giving in this world. That this is the giving of tzedakah helps us in this world and protects us from all types of disasters that we encounter could exceed a tzedakah tatzel mavavs. It says tzedakah saved a person from death. That is very possible that a person by giving tzedakah could open up a channel, a connection to Hashem that will save their lives. There's a story, I don't remember who the sage was, it's a story in the Gemara that he saw on Rosh Hashanah that his nephews were going to lose 700 zoos. So he went to them after Rosh Hashanah and he said, I want you to contribute to my secret giving fund. I will give the tzedakah and you have to give $70 a month. That's how much I want you to give. So this is fine. So the time goes by and they got arrested. They were accused of tax evasion. They owed the government 700 zoos, which is 200 zoos is enough for the average middle class family to live on.
Wow.
So they owed basically what would be the equivalent of many hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Okay? They were arrested.
Right.
So the uncle went to go visit the nephews in jail and he said, how much did you have left of your giving your 700 zoos that I wanted you to give to charity? So he said, or how much have you given? And they said, we gave 630 zoos.
Right.
So he said, fine, give me authority to take out 70 zoos from your account. They said, they want 700 zoos. You're going to give a tenth? He said, no choice. Okay. He got the 70 zoos. He took it. He bribed the guards. They let him out. They forgot about it. Yada bing, bada boom. Okay. They live happily ever after. So he told them about what he saw on Rosh Hashanah. So they said to him, why don't you just tell us, we would have given you the 700 zoos at the beginning of the year. And so he said,
that's not why you were saved.
He said, I wanted you to do it for the mitzvah, not to save yourself.
Right.
Okay, but still, they got saved by giving the 700 away.
Right.
And if tzedakah will save a person from death, how much more so from any other thing that will happen? There's nothing worse than dying. So it's good then that a person should give on a regular basis because every day is a new creation. Every day you are a new creation. That's why every single day you have to do the same thing every morning. You say, Maida'ani, right. And thank you for making me not blind and that right. I can stand up and right. I can walk and I'm not of this and I am of this. Right. Because every day you're a new entity that was not here before ever. And so therefore, and you're judged every day, this person's going to get this much today. So if it is on Rosh Hashanah, it's appropriated how much you're supposed to get in the course of the year,
right?
But you don't get it until the day that you need it.
Right.
So if that be the case then, it would make sense to give tzedakah
that
every
day.
Single day.
That day. Right.
Okay, we got up to page 515, 516 on the bottom numbers, 266 on the top. Ach gamzos, the big words. To be continued.